1234 Super Talk 99.7 WTN. It is the Dan Mandis Show. Yesterday, I told you about a story, and a heartbreaking story at that. Rate of suicides among Chicago police, it's on the rise. And I want to welcome in Rob Michaels. And Rob, you are a local guy, founder and CEO of an organization called Serve and Protect. And from what I understand, you had a number of different calls of folks that heard me talking about this yesterday. And you and your organization, you are dealing with this very issue right now. So let's talk a little bit about the reasons why in cities like Chicago, the suicides among Chicago police is on the rise. First of all, is this something in the article that I talked about yesterday? They said this is the case in a number of different cities. So let's talk a little bit about suicide specifically among police officers. I know this is going to be a lame question because I know the answer to this, and I think most people do know the answer to this, but I'll ask you, the expert. Why is the suicide rate among police officers seeming now to go up?
Well, let me add one statistic to your opening. Every 17 hours, a police officer commits suicide somewhere in the United States. We work with people all over the country trying to prevent that. Another statistic is 3 to 5 times the number of violent line-of-duty deaths. And to get specifically to your question, there are a number of reasons. The most obvious is the kind of things that they see. You know, we'll talk to somebody that's been on the job for 30 years, and it's not that he saw a homicide or a fatality. He's seen 200 fatalities and the bodies that go along with that. And so those memories can get stuck in your short-term memory, or some can. Some may be more relevant to you. We had a call from a guy out in Washington State. He was investigating a homicide. It was a suicide murder. A mother killed her 14-year-old daughter and then killed herself. The officer has a 14-year-old daughter. So it was personal to him. So with all of the things that they're called upon to see, that can leave an emotional wound, an invisible scar that you can't see, but it starts manifesting itself with nightmares, sleeplessness, anger and rage, various symptoms that are post-traumatic stress dealing with the things that they deal with. And then to add on top of that, sometimes they self-medicate so they don't feel those things, and that exacerbates the problem and creates a dual diagnosis problem.
So part of the problem is the fact that, and you just said post-traumatic stress, is that if there is no real way for these police officers to deal with these individual episodes or a constant array of episodes that keeps coming at them every day that they go on the job, then I can just imagine that they're, I don't know if psychological issues is the right way to say it, but it just keeps getting bigger. It's like a snowball going downhill. One tragedy after another tragedy after another tragedy. And I know that there's a lot of departments where they don't necessarily have the resources to help these police officers along the way so that they're able to deal with the kinds of things that they're dealing with. Is this a problem across the country where the departments may or may not have the resources? I mean, yesterday I was talking about in Chicago where they have all of, I think they said they had 3 full-time counselors to help a police force of 13,500 police officers.
Well, here's the problem. It's hit or miss. Some departments have employee assistance. Chicago does. Nashville does. The bigger issue is somebody willing to talk about it? Because in some circles, if you say, I'm struggling, then you're looked at, you become shamed. You know, well, why can't you handle this, man? What's wrong with you? Or just suck it up, buttercup. You know, so there is a... In some areas, there's a mentality where if you need psychological assistance, it's frowned upon. And in some places, they look to take your gun and badge. So they look at that as a, you know, they do fit for duty evaluations and they go, well, this guy's got a problem. There's peer support, but they're afraid to talk to their friends because they might be up against them in a promotion evaluation and, you know, it could slip out. The other issue is in some employee assistance programs. Now, this is illegal, but it happens where a guy goes in. We had a guy in Florida, went in, talked to employee assistants, said, you know, you guys put me on Oxy for my torn shoulders, and I want to sit with a psychologist to make sure I don't get addicted. The next phone call from employee assistants was to the chief. The chief put him on unpaid administrative leave 2 weeks before Christmas with six kids. You see, those things, and then look at San Jose. Well, let me back up a second here. In addition to what they see, for the past 8 years, there has been a war on police.
Sure. Yeah.
It started in Cambridge when a police officer was told he acted stupidly. It was exacerbated in Ferguson, which gave rise to Black Lives Matter. Police officer was accused of doing something he did not do. He was cleared by state, local, and federal investigations, two federal investigations, yet hands up, don't shoot persisted, and the allegations will haunt him for the rest of his life.
And let's not forget, Darren Wilson cannot find a job. I mean, last time I checked, he's obviously out of law enforcement, and he didn't do anything wrong. And I think that's one of the biggest travesties I've ever heard of.
Guy's 6 foot three or four, 300 pounds, and he's coming back at you. He's just beaten you in the eye, and you're criticized as being the bad guy. Look at Baltimore. Malicious prosecution, if I've ever seen it. All six officers cleared of any wrongdoing by a black judge who has prosecuted police in the past, but he found them innocent because you had a district attorney that wanted to make a point. And those things have gone on for years. I'll tell you a better story. I've got two guys that we've helped, one in North Carolina, one in South Carolina. 3 years after Ferguson, a police chief in a two-man town was arrested for murder. On an incident that had happened 3 years before, he shot a man that was trying to kill him. So after Ferguson, a new prosecutor says, hey, they didn't get him, but I'm going to get this guy. The man had been cleared by state, local, and federal authorities, the DOJ, the FBI, all of those guys. Cleared. This man arrested him for murder. He ended up settling for a misdemeanor. That means there was no case. But he did it to prove a point. It happened again in North Carolina last year. So there is an animus against police officers in some political circles.
Right.
That their attitude, let me tell you, when I was a detective, the way you started an investigation was looking at the evidence and see where it took you. But unfortunately, when a police officer is involved, you're presumed guilty, and they try and find the evidence to prove it.
Well, you're right. And as it relates to Baltimore, and I'm sure there's other instances, one of the things that you just said is used to be they looked at the evidence. But these days, and certainly in the Baltimore situation, I think the DA, for one, her own political agenda, but two,
right.
She also bowed to pressure not only from the local media, I'm sure, but also from the community, because
right.
We know what happened in Baltimore with the riots and all of the stupidity that happened right around the same time. So I think the DA probably felt like, well, okay, well, maybe the case might be marginal, might not. But, you know, one, we don't want the community to riot and, you know, burn to the ground. And I've got all this pressure
except
coming
that
at
it
me.
Did.
Yeah, that's I know, except that it did.
Well, and the mayor said, stand back, give them a place to riot.
Right.
Here's the upshot of this, Dan. In San Jose, California, they are so shorthanded that their guys are working 17-hour shifts. They're sleeping in campers behind the precinct because they can't afford to drive home and back. There is a shortage of law enforcement. Departments are trying to hire guys, but you've got guys going, what do I want to do that for when, you know, when they come after you if you sneeze?
Right.
It was different when I was in law enforcement. It was very different. My chief was a cop's cop.
Yeah, and I got to tell you that the more that the Black Lives Matter and political correctness continues to spread across America, I think it bodes not necessarily great for police departments. But you said a couple of things, and I want to go back to.
Sure.
One is that you said that within police forces, there is also this attitude of, okay, come on, you're having problems, you know, man up, or, you know, all these kinds of different things. In other words, you're kind of shamed if you feel like you need to go talk to someone. Is that within management, or is that within the rank and file of the police officers?
It's generally from the top down. I'll say this. I live in Brentwood. They're very good. Chief Hughes and his staff, if there's an issue, they want to get their guys help. Franklin's the same way. You know, part of it is education. Tomorrow I start a series of seminars for Davidson County Sheriff's Department on post-traumatic stress and suicide. So education is a big part of this. Education from the bottom up and the top down. You know, if these guys are afraid to report and say, because here's what typically happens, and I'll give you a good example. Byron Shelton out of Lawrence County was involved in a shooting. He got called by the dispatcher, go to this house, domestic violence. A woman says her husband's going to kill her. His closest backup was 30 minutes away. He pulls up. He hears a woman screaming, "Don't do it, don't do it." He runs in the door. There's the husband, shoots Byron in the upper right chest and in the groin. Byron returns fire and kills the husband, saves the woman's life. He's given a medal by the governor. Well, after a year and a half, they couldn't find a position for him because you get shot in the groin, you kind of messed up.
Yeah.
And so they wouldn't give him a desk job, and he was released from duty for injury sustained in the line of service. They ultimately brought him back.
I was going to say, why wouldn't they give him a desk job?
Apparently they didn't have any is what they were saying.
Mm.
But the point is, there are instances where guys do things heroically that they're not, that cause them stress, and they're not given the proper treatment. Here's a statistic too. 85% of police have some form or some symptoms of post-traumatic stress. 75% of firefighters or of police and 87% of firefighters are divorced. It's a marriage killer. And you see, I'll tell you it's 100% because from the first, you know, for the post-traumatic stress symptoms, because from the very first incident that you have, from the very first fatality that you see, you can't go back. I remember when I was a rookie, we pulled up on an accident that had six people in a car. Five of them died instantly with broken necks. And, you know, you don't forget that. Now, I don't have nightmares about it.
Right.
But we see one of the other symptoms is anger and rage. There was a period in time that my temper, my fuse was pretty short. My last one that I remember is an 18-year-old girl that was broadsided in a Volkswagen by a drunk driver, and she died. I heard her breathe her last breath.
Mm.
That leaves a mark. You don't forget those things. And so are there post-traumatic symptoms? Yeah.
But now let me ask you a question. The other thing you said is, and we're talking about how when a police officer has to use their gun,
mm-hmm.
and you were relating this story about the guy who in Lawrence County got shot in the groin. I'm sure that there's also some officers, because nobody wants to use their gun. But
no.
If an officer does have to shoot someone and ends up killing someone, I would be willing to bet that that also causes PTSD, because even though I know the police officers are trained to use their gun, they're trained to shoot, they go to the shooting range all the time, but when they actually take a life, I would be willing to bet that that also is a cause for some of this psychological trauma.
Well, and part of the problem is with traumatic incidents or critical incidents, they generally have a debriefing. But that debriefing needs to be followed up 3-4 weeks later. How are you doing? Are you having any nightmares? Now, when it involves a line of duty shooting, an officer involved shooting, there needs to be counseling mandated, because, you know, no human being desires to shoot somebody else unless they're a sociopath.
Right.
These guys that are out there would rather do anything than have to shoot somebody and kill them. But they're put into that position. Now, part of what's happened is an upshot of all of this criticism and the war on police. We've had officers, we had one in Birmingham that was afraid to shoot. The guy took her gun and beat her in the head with it. Another officer pulled up to a playground. Guy had a gun. He pulled out his taser and tased him. The guy shot him to death. So this whole anti-police sentiment that's out there is harming our officers, some hesitating, and you can't do that. If somebody's got a gun, you can't play armchair quarterback with yourself. You got to react.
You know, you're right. One of the things that I touched upon yesterday, and Rob Michael joins us. He is founder and CEO of Serve and Protect, and you are doing everything in your power to help police officers because the rate of suicides among police officers in some cities is going up. One of the things that I talked about yesterday is I keep going back to the Chicago Four. And these are those four who had that that special needs man. They kidnapped him. They did all kinds of horrible things to him. They shoved his face in a toilet. They're burning him. I know that you know the story.
Oh, yeah.
Is part of the problem the fact that these police officers are dealing with just, I mean, the absolute worst in our society? Because I don't know if I could take that.
You know, the girl that got killed in that wreck that I mentioned. When the guy got out of his car was on the roof. He was spinning around. He crawled out, and he goes, and he's laughing. He said, "Man, I effed up. I stuck my nickel-plated Colt 38 Special in his ear and cocked it. And by the grace of God, I didn't pull my trigger. And by the grace of God, we didn't have phone cameras. But you know, you're right. Our guys want to save lives. 99.9% of those that are out on the streets are heroes. They go to work every day ready to put their life on the line and do too often to save somebody else. The last thing we want to do is take another life. But if the only way to stop a threat is to neutralize it, they're trained to do so. They're not trained to shoot the gun out of the hand. They're trained to do so. Now, part of what got me angry about the Chicago issue is Loretta Lynch dropped that report on her way out the door on Chicago. And she criticized the department. She talked about dysfunction and this, that, and the other. Buried in all of that information that she forgot to mention was the suicide rate over 10 years being twice that of the line of duty deaths. Now, let me give you some numbers that absolutely is traumatic. In 2015, we had 130 total deaths of police officers. In 2016, we had 140, 10 difference. However, here's the big number. Line of duty death by gunfire in 2015, 39. That's still too many. However, in 2016, it was 63. Vehicular assault, 8 in 2015, 12 in 2016. We had two guys that were beaten to death in 2016. I mean, Dan, when you've got this kind of unbridled violence against police, and of the 63 shot to death, a third of them were by ambush.
Yeah.
When you've got people walking in the streets protesting, pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon, right. Or in New York, what do we want? Dead cops. Well, let me tell you something. After that march, two police officers were ambushed and killed sitting in their car,
yep,
doing nothing. And the guy that did it had been at that march, heard that chant, went home and got his gun, came back and killed two cops.
Rob, I could go on with you all day, but I can't. I got to run. Real quickly, how can folks get more information on your organization and your seminars?
Go to serveprotect.org,
okay.
And that's our website. We're a nonprofit. We don't charge anything for what we do. We exist by the good graces of people that believe in us.
And Rob, I thank you for what you do, and you have a great afternoon. It's 12:54 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Very compelling stories, and we'll be sure and have Rob back. It.